latest Bronze and Modern Gods. I'm John.
I'm Richard.
Hey, we appreciate all the support. We are so close to 5,000 subscribers. If you have not subscribed yet, please hit that button. Hit like. We appreciate everything you guys do for us. And if you're not following us on Facebook and Instagram, you know the deal. It's at Bronze and Modern Gods on both those platforms. Today, we've got viewer mail, a little discussion about what's going on at CGC. Yes, again, deal with it. Underrated books of the week. But first, we have a quick word from our sponsor this week, which is Richard Wacoom. Have you used Wacoom, Richard?
I have. And Wacoom is a great app for keeping track of your comic book collection. It allows you to take a picture of your comic book, and it will automatically add it to your database. It's really easy to use and pretty comprehensive.
I like it because it's really geared towards comic book readers. Right. It helps you keep track of what you've read and what you haven't, which, you know, if you buy as much stuff as Richard and I, you probably need help with that. It also lets you keep track of your graphic novels, your trade paperback collections, your omnibuses. It's more than just comic books. And if you scan your UPC and it doesn't come up, hey, that's the cool thing about Wacoom. It's collaborative. You can just go right in and add the book. If it's a variant cover, which we'll cover in a second, our hot book of the week, and it's not in the system, you're just going to add it. It's simple, and it's available for free, Richard. That's the best part.
Absolutely. You can get it either at the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store today.
I love that price, free. That's my favorite price. Check it out. It's Wacoom. And a reminder, Richard and I will be streaming live from California Comic Con in Costa Mesa, California, Sunday, February 5th, from the Short Box booth. If you've never been to California Comic Con, you've got to come. It is amazing. It's going to be at the Westin at South Coast Plaza in Costa Mesa. If you visit calcomiccon.com, you can get all the information. Richard, tell everybody what California Comic Con is like.
Imagine a convention that didn't have Funkos or action figures or random things that were tangentially related to comics. You want to see comics, you go to the California Comic Con because that's what they focus on.
If you like cosplaying as Kratos from God of War, this is not the show for you. If you like buying Linda Carter, student nurse number 3 in an 8.0 slab, this is your show.
Absolutely.
We will see you Sunday, February 5th at Costa Mesa, California. Visit calcomiccon.com to find out more. Tickets are limited, so if you haven't gotten yours yet, there's a preview night the night before Richard and I will be at. Make sure you get your tickets now. And we're going to move on to our hot book of the week. Richard, tell everyone what it is.
Our hot book this week is World's Finest, number 11, the Jack White variant.
What is? Who is this for? Who's this book for?
Okay,
let's count the number of White Stripes fans that are also comic book collectors. I mean, okay, I do like the cover. It's really cool. It's kind of got this indie art rock feel to it. But I get it. You know, the whole thing is the Joker's real name has been revealed to be Jack White, so it's tangentially related. Yeah. Did Third Man Records come up to DC and say, we really want to do a Jack White variant cover? Here's the crazy thing. It's selling for $30 to $60 on eBay already, and this was open to order. This was not a limited variant. This wasn't a ratio.
I would have passed it right by. There's no way I would have bought this.
Here's the thing, though, Richard. It's a perfect example of FOMO in action because I'm not a huge Jack White fan. I'm more of a Meg White fan. I like drummers that can't keep time. It's very, very narrow field. But I still want a copy. Why? What's wrong with me? Why do I want this?
Yeah, that's FOMO, dude. I have no real interest in this book. The cover really doesn't even appeal to me. It really doesn't. The word finest with the three eyes really drives me crazy.
See, I think it's cool. I think it looks like, you know, an old a gig poster from a band that's like, you know, on the bulletin board at a club somewhere. It just reminds me of that. Maybe it's the music guy in me that's really getting that appeal. Go ahead. Sorry.
I just wanted to highlight for our fans who are listening on podcasts who may not have seen this cover. It's a dark blue and black cover with a little pop of white. And
a little pop of Jack White.
Jack White. And, you know, World Finest across it, but the World Finest is spelled with three I's. And it's to me, it's just not an attractive cover.
World's Finest. These musician covers are a thing now. We've had Notorious B.I.G. with Deadpool. We've had Eminem and Spider-Man. Paul McCartney with Superman. I think I'm irritated because when I was working at my last job at a major label, I kept trying to get these things going with our artists, and I kept getting turned down by various people. And now the thing I did get off the ground was the Monkees Meet the Archies, mm-hmm. but everything else, you know, it just didn't work. And so I see this happening now and I'm super jealous.
I don't know. I feel this is a flash in the pan. I really don't see us talking about this in a year. Now some of these have been very popular. Eminem's covers have been very popular, but I think people are trying to play off of that. Mm-hmm. But in the long run, it's Jack White. Who really is going to be desirous of this book after the initial FOMO wears out?
I am just waiting for the Cardigans Thunderbolts cover next year.
Now that I might buy.
I would too. I'm joking, but I would be first in line for that one. All right. Moving on to one of our favorite topics on this show, complaining about CGC. That seems
to be our subtitle, doesn't it?
Bronze and Modern Gods / CGC complaints. Richard and I have been texting all week because I have been experiencing something very strange. I sent a giant submission in for the first time in months, mm-hmm. and it was a combination of a magazine, My Love and Rockets number one, Fast Track Economy, Fast Track Modern, and most importantly, an Express submission. They all went in the same box. I marked it EX on the outside, you know, so they would open it first, which they did. It was all received on January 6th. As of January 22nd, I've already received my Fast Track Modern, got it in a week, which was crazy.
Yeah.
The Fast Track Economy will be here tomorrow, which is really good. My Express has been stuck in grading and quality control for over a week now. Why? I understand they've got more graders for Modern and maybe Economy, and they probably have specialized graders for Express. Here's my thing. Don't call it Express anymore. Mm-hmm. Express implies that it will be to you in an expressed timely manner, yeah, above priority of everything else. And that is not what is happening.
Yeah. I remember walkthrough used to be one day and an express was 3 to 7 days. And that just doesn't apply anymore and hasn't applied for such a long time.
I'm also seeing a lot on Instagram about, and also on YouTube, some YouTubers, people concerned about the really harsh grading of Modern stuff that they thought a year ago would come back 9.8 slam dunks, seeing a lot of 9.6s, a lot of 9.4s. I don't know if that is widespread. My Modern submission that it came back what I thought every book was going to come back as. The grades were pretty accurate to me. So I'm asking you guys out in the audience, leave us some comments here. What have you been experiencing with CGC lately? Is it are the graders really being harsh? And if so, my speculation, 100% speculation, is these are new graders, so they're being super careful and they're being, you know, following the rules to the letter and maybe being a little over careful with the grading. What do you think?
Yeah, that sounds logical. And for Moderns, the difference is astounding between a 9.6 and a 9.8 value. If I had, for example, a Ultima Fallout 4 Dejevic variant, and I wanted to send it in, and I thought it was a 9.8, I might wait, because the difference between a 9.8, which the last 9.8 sale was $43,000, and a 9.6, which the last sale, I think, was $12,000. It's unbelievable. And that's the way it is with those high-end moderns. So I might wait until there's a more favorable environment.
You bring up a really good point that I think is important to mention again, and that is, this is nothing new. CGC has had really tight grading periods and really loose grading periods and really tight grading periods, really loose grading periods. So you just have to roll the dice sometime and take what you get. I would also say a lot of the people that are complaining about the grades not matching, are you being an honest grader? You got to really be honest with yourself sometimes. You got to hold it up to the light, tilt it, you know.
It's legitimate. I think CGC, I've done submissions with a required grade. Like I send in 25 books and I have it so that nothing, I will only grade the 9/8. So anything that's not in a 9/8, send back. And I go over those books, I scrutinize those books. And I got a lot of books back that I could have sworn were 9/8. There's no visible flaws, no indication there's an issue with them. And they just got rejected. I was very tempted to take those same books, turn around and submit them again, just to see what the grade they would get from CGC. You know, that's a great experiment, but it was, you know, at $40-$50 a book, it's not something that I was really looking forward to.
Yeah, one thing also on Instagram, when I posted about this as well this week, some comments from people saying they've had books sitting for months and months. Guys, we've said it before, fast track is the only way to go. If you don't care and you don't want to spend the money and you can be patient, sure. But if you want your books back, you got to splurge. Sorry.
It's, I don't even count it as splurging. I mean, do you want CGC to hold onto your book in their questionable quality control for X number of months? Or do you want it safely in your collection? You know, I want my books turned around as quickly as possible just to reduce the amount of handling that they have to go through.
You are correct. Hey, let us know in the comments what your experience has been. We're really curious. It's not scientific, but we'll take a poll and talk about it next week in a segment we call Viewer Mail.
You've got mail.
Richard, what is your first piece of viewer mail?
My first piece of viewer mail actually came through our Facebook account, and it's hot off the press. This is something that I just received, and it tickled me, so I just wanted to highlight it today. It's from a Diana Garza. Hi, guys. I just wanted to say that my husband and I really enjoy your podcasts. In fact, I have been following you so that I can share my husband's passion for collecting and so that I am not stupid when I go out with him to conventions. That is so awesome. You guys really help a girl out in learning about comic art by making it easier to understand. Anyway, we were out at a con, spotted this book, and thought of you. It's sitting in a treasure spot in our collection. Looking forward to your next broadcast. And the book they sent over is... why don't you describe it, John?
It's Jem, Son of Saturn, number 12, of course. What else would it be?
That is a great book. That is so John. That is awesome. Thank you so much, Diana, for taking the time out to message us. It really did tickle me, and I really enjoy hearing from our fans and people who just want to participate in what we do here. Thank you again.
The only thing that would have made that better is if it was a newsstand or a Canadian price variant, but we'll take it. Thank you so much for that comment. My first piece of viewer mail is from Timothy Marking, good old Timothy, who reminds me of something that I completely forgot about when we were talking about Ms. Marvel being canceled suddenly with two issues left unpublished. Timothy says, Ms. Marvel likely didn't see her final issues because of the little known Marvel implosion of 1979. Absolutely. Marvel axed many of their comics dated April or May of 79, like the remaining Western reprint titles, as well as books like Nova, Black Panther, Howard the Duck. Coincidentally, it was the same month Marvel went to 40 cents, as well as officially going to direct sales. Some dangling plot lines were finished out in other comics like Black Panther versus the Klan and Marvel Premiere. Absolutely. Howard the Duck relaunched as a magazine, but strangely, Marvel launched several reprint titles plus ROM that fall in December of 79. The reason why they launched those reprint titles are Tales to Astonish with Submariner, brought back Marvel's Greatest Comics with the Fantastic Four. They brought back Fantasy Masterpieces with the Silver Surfer. I remember, Richard's favorite. I remember reading in the Comic Reader that they were planning on launching some new titles and they weren't ready yet. So in order to reserve space at the printers, they had to have something on the schedule to keep that space for the new titles so it didn't get taken by other publishers. So they just put those reprint titles. That's why they only lasted for 14 months until those books were ready. And Timothy also has a note about Fantastic Four 252, the other tattoos issue. The newsstand copy I bought did not have the tattoos, but when I later found a direct copy, it did have the insert. So yes, haphazard printing.
That's really interesting. And that kind of ties into my next piece of viewer mail. This is from a friend of the show, Bat227. Here is a factoid about tattoos. For the Canadian price variance, CPV, i.e. newsstand copies for Canada, only ASM 238 had the tattoos for the CPV, even though the Fantastic Four number 252 CPV copy in Canada advertised on the cover that it would include tattoos, none of them had the tattoos.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, I was not aware that tattoos were so, again, we're in so many different issues of in that period. That's pretty cool. I meant to pull out my Fantastic Four 252 before the show just to see if I had tattoos in mine, but I'm a lazy guy and didn't do it.
We're busy men. We have things to take care of. My next piece of viewer mail is from Eggplant Comics. Pause. Eggplant emoji. Why is the Avengers 4 homage attached to an issue of Amazing Spider-Man? Eggplant, thank you. That drives me crazy. When these homage variant covers started a few years ago, where they just had nothing to do with the book that it was slapped upon, it drove me nuts. I guess people just don't give a crap anymore. You know, they're buying it for the cover. They're not even cracking it open. Like Ninja Funk. I defy anybody to tell me Ninja Funk has interior pages. Does it? Is it just blank pages?
Yeah, this is a bad, bad habit that Marvel seems to do. I'm a huge fan of covers. Everybody knows I love covers and I buy books on the cover, but I expect the cover to tie in with the book that it's related to. Having this Avengers 4 homage to an ASM book really just doesn't make any sense. I don't know why they couldn't put it on an Avengers title.
I don't understand, but here we are. What's your next piece of viewer mail?
My next piece is from Eric Perry. And we're talking about different names for comic ages. A new age for comics, starting with Ultimate Fallout 4 or UF1, would make sense. Now, I had to put this in here because, you know, this is total logic to me. Having the transition from Peter Parker to, you know, the Ultimate Universe and Miles Morales as being an impetus. So that's 2011 would be the start of that age based on that. And I think that's a nice breakaway, right? That's 12 years ago at this point?
So you would say the Copper Age would go all the way up to Ultimate Fallout 4 then?
I'm saying that's a demarcation of an age. I don't know if we divide the ages before, the time before it into more ages, but having it divide at major events kind of makes sense as well to me, as opposed to just picking an arbitrary year and saying, okay, it ends here. You know, like Silver Age started, back when...
Showcase number 4 with the Flash.
Showcase number 4 with the Flash, right. So, you know, that is an indication of a year, of a comic that is tied to the beginning of that age. And, you know, we could do the same thing with other ages as well.
It tends to be about 15 years. So, mm-hmm. You know, Golden Age is 38 to about 55. Silver Age is 55 to about 1970. Bronze Age, 70 to 85. Copper Age after that. I think the Copper Age should probably end, I don't know, with Heroes Reborn maybe, or Ultimate Spider-Man number 1 in 2000. I don't know. Yeah. You guys let us know in the comments what you think.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting idea because you can divide those eras by specific events as opposed to an arbitrary number of years.
Right, which is the way it's always been. I mean, you know, Bronze Age started with Green Lantern, Green Arrow.
Right.
So, yeah, nothing new. We just have to all get together and agree 100%, which is really easy for people to do in the country.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody's, you know, there is no arbiter of all this, right? I mean, no one makes the decision and then everyone abides by it.
It used to be Overstreet.
Oh, that's a good point.
You know,
is Overstreet the source of the, you know, bronze, silver, copper, atomic? I think
all the advisors kind of got together when there were, you know, a really tight knit group of advisors, and now it's just so stratified. And I don't know.
Overstreet just lost out. They had an opportunity to really guide things, and they just dropped the ball, in my opinion.
Okay, Richard. Wow. My last piece of viewer mail is from Shrews Clues, John Shrewsbury, who says, when we're talking about 1983 being the best year for music ever, no arguments, sorry. I can't tell you how incredibly happy it made me listening to you both be nostalgic for music and art of our generation. Thank you, John. Somebody else, I'm blanking on who, apologies, reminded me also that U2 War came out in 1983.
Oh, yes, the Red Rocks concert for U2. They had it on VCR, VHS tape. I watched that thing 800 times. And I still, whenever I catch it on YouTube, I will sit there for the hour plus and watch that damn
thing. Oh, MTV would play that Sunday Bloody Sunday live from Red Rocks video at the beginning. This song is not a rebel song. This song is Sunday Bloody Sunday.
Oh, God. That's
so long. I'm like, oh, my God. This is a 7-minute video.
Ugh. No, U2 is one of my favorite bands, up to Joshua Tree. Why can't I think of the name of the
band? It's funny you jumped off with Joshua Tree, huh?
I did. I jumped off with Joshua Tree because that's Zooropa was next, and they started the whole
Achtung Baby. Achtung Baby.
Baby, yeah.
Come on. Achtung
Baby didn't do it for me.
Really?
Unforgettable Fire for me is possibly my favorite album of all time. Brian Eno did an amazing job producing that.
Did you like it when you first heard it, though? Remember when you first heard it?
I did.
Did you?
Put your headphones on and listen to that album and listen to the sonic portion of that album. It just flows in your head and it's just an amazing.
I remember Unforgettable Fire came out and I loved War. And the production, you know, you've got A Sort of Homecoming is the first song. And the production is so muddy. Everything's in the mud. There's nothing that's standing out. Like the vocals are mixed really weird. And I thought, ooh, this is not good. But I love the album now. But at the time, I remember it was kind of like Ministry Twitch the first time I played it. I was like, wait, this isn't what's happening?
Oh, no, it's to me, I think it's the pinnacle of U2. I know I was a big boy. I'm a fan of Boy, you know, back when they were a rock and roll band as opposed to a pop band, which is what they became. I just lost interest in them because I feel they lost contact with their roots as they changed to be.
They got bored.
That could very well be. I mean, you make the same style of music for 30 years, you get tired of it.
You mean you didn't like Lemon?
Did not. Nope. 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 Nope.
You didn't like Numb Edge rapping?
No.
Boy, we are old, which is a good time to transition to the old fart rule. Hey, the old fart rule. 40 years in the past.
Oh, it's
my back, my shoulder. Old fart rule. This is the portion of the podcast for people who sleep wrong and are sore from sleeping.
I raised my hand.
I know. I will lay on the pillow the wrong way and I'll wake up and wait. I was asleep. What did I do? We go back 40 years to 1983 and look at the books of that year. Richard, I love this pick. You spelled it wrong, though. You spelled it T-A-L-E-S.
It is. That is how it is in the census. Marvel Tales number one.
It is Marvel Tales, T-A-I-L-S, as in the little tails on the animals.
Oh, no, darn it. I did spell it wrong here. I thought I spelled it right. Okay, you're right. I did spell it wrong. It's Marvel Tales number one. It's actually, in reality, in GPA, it's both. There's both.
I'm sure. It is the first appearance of Peter Parker, the amazing Spider-Ham.
Yes, Peter Porker was a spider in an alternate universe. You know, the multiverse exists. He's a spider that got bitten by a pig.
Spider pig.
He got superpowers. So he is the Peter Parker. He's the Spider-Man or Spider-Ham of his particular part of the multiverse. He's a popular character when it came out. This series ran, I think it was 16 issues for...
Well, Marvel Tales was a one-shot, and then it sold so well, surprisingly, that they launched Peter Porker, the Amazing Spider-Ham, as a series that ran for 16 issues, correct?
Yep. Great book. He was, Spider-Ham obviously was a character in the Into the Spider-Verse movie. He is almost guaranteed to be in either one or both of the upcoming Spider-Verse movies.
John Mulaney.
Yeah. Who?
John Mulaney is the voice of Peter Parker.
Okay. He also comes with a cast of characters that they haven't drawn on yet. So we'll see if that happens as well. I'd love to see a spin-off cartoon or some kind of animated series based on this character. I think it'd be great. There are, there's a direct version of this. There's a newsstand. There's a Mark Jewelers. There's a Canadian Price variant. So this book has a lot of representation in the census. Prices are a bit around all over the place. If you look at the direct version, the last sale for the direct was $265 with an average 90-day sale of $293.
That's way down.
Yeah, it's been dropping. The price in 2021, for example, was $470 average price.
Buy the dip.
Yeah. The Canadian Price variant and the Mark Jewelers variant are more expensive. I think there's a smaller number of those in the wild. The last sale for the Mark Jewelers was $1,150 back in 2021, and the CPV went for $858 in January of that year. So there are 1,431 9/8 on the census right now for the direct copy. CPV, there is only 49.
Wow.
So a significant difference. This is, you know, I was looking at this. I don't think that the CGC census calls out the newsstands for this.
We had to stop recording real quick because look who's here, everyone. Everyone's favorite guest host, except for Evan. Look at how big this baby is now.
Yes, he's a big guy. He is a big guy.
But you were saying that CGC and the census, they can't show the newsstand census because they just started doing that on the label. So, yeah, but you can see it in GPA, though.
Yeah, that's why I'm sure I don't know how you can pull it out in GPA if it's not on the CGC.
I'm just looking at Tinker. He just wants attention.
He does.
I know, poor baby. Hey, let's take a break to go to our underrated books of the week. I'm going to start off this week with one of my oddball favorites. It is Astonishing Tales number 24. This is one of the issues that features It, the Living Colossus. However, you know what you want this book for? It's the third appearance of Fin Fang Foom. Now, Fin Fang Foom was a cameo in 23, so that's actually his second appearance. 24 here, though, is the second Fin Fang Foom cover after his appearance in Strange Tales, which goes for thousands of dollars now. For Astonishing Tales 24, a CGC 9.4 sold for $408 in March of last year. Not too shabby for a 9.4, no? Meanwhile, Astonishing Tales 23 had a sale for a CGC 9.8 last month for $401. So kind of evening out here. Fandom seems to be split on which one they're chasing, 23 or 24. I say 24 because he's on the cover. This is just a really cool oddball book. I love this book.
Awesome.
Look at Dinker.
I'm sorry. He's just pay attention to me.
I love it. Oh, what's your underrated book this week?
My underrated book this week is Teen Titans number 20, the 1 in 25 design variant by Jimenez. I'm assuming that's how you pronounce his last name.
Jimenez.
Okay.
Phil Jimenez.
It's the first full appearance of Crush, Lobo's daughter. Lobo is a Lobo is a badass. If you follow DC Comics, Lobo has been around since the 80s. He has been kind of the anti-hero, do you want to call him? There's news about Lobo. Apparently, he is scheduled to appear in a DC movie here in the future. And if there is any popularity to him, this book is the first appearance of his daughter, Crush. And, there's potential value in this book. I like this cover. I have been buying this book since it came out a couple years ago. I just like I like the art style. I like the design variant style on that white background. And I think it's a great book. It's pretty affordable. The 9/8 right now, the last sale was $82 for the 9/8, which is down from the high of about $200. So it's now is a good time to buy it. I was buying this book raw back in the day, and you could still get it raw for anywhere from $30 to $40. And it's a great book, I think, to have in the back of your long box, because if something does pop for Lobo, this kind of character, Crush is kind of a lot like Lobo in that she's very very aggressive, very direct action kind of character. And I could see her being popular, you know, on the silver screen. So, I think it's a great book to have again, you know, for less than $100 for a 9/8. I think it's a great time to buy this.
Yeah. Buy it, put it in a box, hold it for 50 years. You know, the usual. All right, that's going to wrap up short and sweet this week's episode. A reminder, we're going to be streaming live from California Comic Con Sunday, February 5th. It is at the Westin Hotel near South Coast Plaza in Costa Mesa, California. Visit calcomiccon.com to get tickets and to find out more. Richard's going to be there. We're going to be at the Short Box booth. We're going to be talking to people, and we'll see you there.
Yeah, it'll be a good time. Even if you don't, if you just want to make fun of us, stop by.
Relax the garbage at us. We don't care.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
And a reminder, follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Bronze and Modern Gods. Hit like, hit subscribe. We're so close to 5,000 subscribers. We love you all. And we'll see you next time.
Everybody, stay safe.